91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Stay tuned for an At Your Service edition about South Florida gardening. Hello, it's Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper. Winter begins next Monday, and lucky us, ours is the perfect environment for giving loving care to bountiful plant life. We'll take questions for Broward County Urban Horticulture Agent John Popoli and Florida Master Gardener Terry Goldsmith. Perhaps you're giving a holiday gift plant. We have tips. What varieties are best planted this time of year? What sort of pruning and upkeep is needed? Perhaps you've thought a butterfly garden would be cool. What plants attract them? And must herbicides be avoided? We'll also take questions about sustainable landscapes that are low on maintenance. So we're ready for your questions next on Topical Currents after the news. Welcome back to today's Topical Currents, 6 minutes after 1 o'clock. Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper. Well, this hour is about South Florida gardening in our At Your Service edition. We have this segment every few months to acquaint you with the unique aspect of gardening, South Florida style.
And we know you have many questions. We'll take them at 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-9576. Also email, if you like, radio@wlrn.org. Please be brief, both phone and email.
Because we're going to have a lot of calls and emails. So we now turn to our guest. First, it's the president of Florida Master Gardeners of Broward County, Terry Goldsmith. Always good to have you back. Welcome, Terry.
Well, thank you. Good to see you. Happy
Christmas.
You've
been doing research for today's program.
Yes.
Also with us, with advice to gardeners, is Urban Horticulture and Natural Resources Extension Agent, Dr. John Popoli. He's also an instructor for Master Gardener and Master Naturalist programs. Welcome to you, John.
Thank you very much. It's really a pleasure to be here always.
Well, my first question has nothing to do with anything we're supposed to talk about today. I want to know, though, how the rain and the heat that we're having is affecting gardening and planting and
everything.
All that.
I have one word for you, fungus.
Yeah.
Yes, we're going to have a fungus among us.
Yeah, all over
and
the place.
And worse yet, there are some mangoes that are beginning to bud.
So I saw that, John.
The problem with that is
if
it stays warm the rest of the winter, you might get a small crop from that group that's going to flower. But if it goes back to its normal pattern, we'll lose everything. And then those cultivars will not be bearing the nice fruit they usually do. So that's a problem. And of course, the pollinators are going to suffer. Because the flowers are out and there's no pollinators available for them. That's another problem.
So it is a problem.
Yeah, huge. It is. That's called climate change. And it's real and it's in
our face. Didn't
want
to say it, no. But okay.
I had mushrooms coming up from mulch.
Me
last
too.
Week.
Yes, yes.
Stuff I had never seen before. But yeah, the fungus is the biggest problem.
Yeah.
And if you keep keeping things dry, really, is the best way to do it. I've even been pushing the mulch away from some of my more prized plants because it kind of lets things stay. It's been dry for a couple of days now, so things are starting to dry out again.
I was just going to say one really important thing to remember is the true tropics have gone from Key West all the way to Aventura, and they're moving north 10 miles a year. So it's now time for all of us to look at the beautiful plants from the Keys that are natives and that are now available in the market.
So you're saying,
and plant them in Broward.
You're
They'll
saying
grow
that
well.
We've gone from subtropical to tropical now?
Well, we're at true subtropical. We're not tropical. We're true subtropical, because before we were what was called 10, now we're 11.
I was just going to say, what's the number? Because I've noticed
we're
a lot
11.
Of times that we look at the numbers, we're not sure which one we are anymore, and it's moved. It used to be 10, no?
Yeah, and 11 is up to Aventura.
So amazing.
Well, with the first day of winter coming up soon, what kind of landscape or gardening chore should be done at this time? Be it pruning, fertilizing, something like that?
Pruning for sure, because of the weather. If you see anything, like especially any kind of damage, black spots and fungus and things like that, you should prune and you should clean your tool after each pruning, because people don't realize when they go from plant to plant, they can actually transmit disease where there isn't any. So I would say, that in my yard, that's what I've been doing,
yeah,
pushing the mulch around.
Pruning's number one. Inspect your plants because there are a lot this because of all the increased humidity. We have more scales than normal, and we have some other critters that like to attach themselves. We also have a lot more problems with a thing called Myloceros, which is a little thing that's the thing that eats the holes in everything that you have in your yard.
Is it time to plant vegetables though at all?
Yeah, there are three or four things that do real well when they're planted this time of year, and I can
but not check. Tomatoes.
Well, let me look.
Tomatoes
there
should
might,
be okay.
There should
There's
be
lots of varieties of tomatoes you can plant now. It's still even as late as January. I know the urban farmers in our Master Gardener program. A lot of them are planting tomatoes.
They're
now.
Recommending the larger. For cultivars, so that would mean the beefsteaks will do better this time of year.
Huh. And
so
what
that's
else?
Fine. Oh, broccoli, cabbage, carrots, cauliflower, Chinese cabbage, collards, corn, cucumber,
any green leafy vegetable.
Yep. Escarole, lettuces. Kohlrabi goes crazy this
Kohlrabi's
time of year.
Terrific.
Very well.
Yeah. Sorry,
Lima,
don't
Poland,
know what that
Bush
is.
Beans.
Kohlrabi.
And that's the thing that kind of looks like a turnip, and it's green. And you can slice it and roast it.
It's the plant root, actually. The ball comes out of the ground. It's like a white ball.
It's just wonderful.
It's delicious. Yeah.
All the different Poland bush beans. You can get the big green beans, too. The ones that are 24 inches long, which have a really strong taste.
But you need a trellis for that because they climb.
Yeah. Well, our number is 1-800-743-9576 if you'd like to join in. We're already getting some calls. Bonnie, at the close of yesterday's program, you promised that we'd be giving live Christmas tree tips.
Okay, well, let's go to Christmas trees then. How do we keep our Christmas tree fresh through the holiday?
Step one, make sure you measure the area you're going to put your tree, because most people buy trees that are too big, and then they make a mess of
it's
the
a
tree
classic mistake.
Making it fit.
Okay, yeah. What's too big?
Well, you know, it shouldn't be pushing up against your ceiling, or it shouldn't be somewhere where it's in direct sunlight or in a direct draft from an air conditioner. Those are the big things. So make sure it's better to have a smaller tree that doesn't get abused because it'll last longer.
You know, the other thing, too, is it has to do with the height of your ceilings, because you can tell a little bit by the height of your ceiling what diameter you ought to have before you have to start moving the sofa around and stuff like that.
I was reading in your information, though, even before you get it home, is if you get it at a home center or the grocery store, to cover it when it's on top of your car because the wind from driving will dry it out.
Well, if you think about fresh cut flowers, when you get them home, they're already starting to wilt, and they always tell you to, you know, cut off the ends.
Right.
It's no different with the big trees.
Yeah.
So what should you do?
Well, if you don't have, here's the two app method. If you have a way to cut the bottom inch or half inch off when you get home.
What would you use, a saw?
Yeah, a saw, just a regular saw. You can even use a hacksaw if you don't have a crosscut saw. But if you don't have the tools, then you can have it done there.
Right.
Just take a wet rag with you, put it over the bottom of the tree and a garbage bag around it.
Yeah, so have them cut it off for you before you go home.
Load the tree on top of your car, bottom first, so that it won't break the branches as it's going against the wind. It'll be more aerodynamic.
Yeah, it won't open up then.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it'd be great.
And what about, and then keeping them, so the most important thing is the size and the placement.
And then always with water, because they can use up to a quart of water a day per inch diameter. So that's
amazing,
a lot of water.
You wouldn't believe it would be that much.
Don't add anything to it. Use only tap water, because the chlorine in the tap water will prevent fungi from going in the water and going in the conductive tissue that's called xylem. And then once it can't drink, it starts drying out and the days are numbered.
And can you, is there any way to plant a Christmas tree if it's still alive?
No, unless it has the roots.
The roots are cut off. And then if people do get those, the Norfolk pines as gifts, and I know a lot of people do. My neighbor planted his.
You can buy them with the root ball.
Oh, for sure. You can. But the point is they don't belong here, and they usually turn out to be, they get very tall and very gangly looking, and, they don't belong in South Florida on the ground.
Especially not in
storms. What about as mulch? Right. Can it be used as mulch after Christmas?
You would have to compost it.
You couldn't use a chipper?
You can chipper, and then after that, compost it, because if you put it on there fresh, it will suck up the nitrogen that's in the ground in the area and starve the other plants.
Oh.
So it's very important to always mulch it for a while.
Is that because of the acid?
No, it's because it's an active thing that's absorbing nutrients as if it were growing. So when you mulch it, it turns all gray. You keep turning it over till it's all that way. Then it's no longer a living thing.
So what do you figure, 4 weeks?
Four to six, depending on how it's.
Turn it around
a few times, 4 weeks.
It is a lovely thing to use for mulch, though. Yeah. It smells good, too.
Yeah, I would think.
It keeps the insects away.
Yeah, it keeps
the
insects away.
But mulch it, make sure you compost it.
Compost it first.
Yeah. That way we better go to calls before.
Well, we have one email about Christmas trees, though. Roseanne wants to know how to take care of the rosemary Christmas trees that are for sale everywhere right now. She's never managed to keep one alive. And Roseanne, I'm with you. Either have I.
And, you know, I think I've given one to everybody in my family, these rosemary trees, and they're so beautiful. And I have some chef friends that cut off the pieces and they cook with them during the holiday. And we were talking about this earlier. I think most of the time they die because they're just given too much attention. More than you would a house plant. You get it as a gift.
It's like a weed.
Well, now, Joe, really, it smells great, and you can put it in your tomato sauce.
Of course. Oh, yeah.
But they're beautiful.
Fresh in my yard.
Yeah, so they come to you in a little tree shape, and I know everybody has this inclination to sort of dote on them for the holidays, because when the relatives come, you want it to still be alive so they can see
they
take care of
it. Great with
any pork. Oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
But, John, you also said, I mean, out of the sun, right, because they dry out quickly. You shouldn't overwater the rosemary.
Yeah, you don't want to overwater
it.
It can have filtered light.
Yeah,
but, you know,
filtered light.
The main thing is the soil can be a little damp, but not really wet.
Shouldn't be wet.
Because they'll rot easily. Remember, the ideal habitat for those plants is naturally a loose, sandy area. So they like being well-drained.
Well, let's take a first call. Okay. Matt in Fort Lauderdale. Hey there.
Hi there. How are you?
Good.
Good.
I recently planted zoysia throughout the whole yard, and about 6 weeks ago. And you can still see the sod rows, and it's filling in nicely, but I was wondering if it needs to be top-dressed.
Did you prepare the soil before you put it in?
Yes.
Well, then you probably will get away with not having to do that. And it would probably, right now, given that it's raining this much, I think it's best that you don't, because you're going to contribute more to sort of runoff, non-point source pollution. Because I don't think the plants will use it fast enough, and it'll leach out or run off. Because if you already went to that other trouble and put it down, then it's going to be doing just fine the way it is. So in 30 days, if you have any problems, that's where you tweak things. Okay?
Okay.
Sounds great, though. You're the first person in Fort Lauderdale that has ever prepared the soil properly before putting their stuff down. Congratulations.
Well, thanks. And they recommend that you cut it with a real lawnmower. Is that really necessary?
Because otherwise you're going to tear it up. You're going to get long strings that'll pull up, and it will sort of look like someone that has a full beard that decides to trim it when they've had a few drinks too many.
You know, and you'll save on your gym membership. I've done that. I made the mistake of trying it on St. Augustine grass. That was an eye-opener. But for the Zoysia, that's real easy to do.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, Matt, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Okay, we're speaking with Dr. John Pipoli, Urban Horticulture and Natural Resources Extension Agent for Broward County Parks and Recreation, and Terry Goldsmith is the president of the Florida Master Gardeners of Broward County. We'll come back and take more of your calls and emails. 1-800-743-9576.
And we're back. Topical Currents at your service. Gardening Edition with John Pipoli, Dr. John Pipoli, and Terry Goldsmith. And let's go right to the photo. I want to talk about that photo you got, Bonnie, and what people should do.
Okay. Barbary with your mango tree. Actually, just came back. I don't know why.
Master Gardener at Broward.org. All one word.
Master Gardener at Broward.org. Okay, Barbary, I'll try forwarding, but you should, because what did you want to say?
Oh, because there's several things it can be. There are potassium deficiencies.
Talking about a mango tree.
A mango tree, right. You usually use 0050, which you have to normally go to John Deere establishments to get easily. The large horticultural supply houses also have it. The other things are watering things. So We'll take a look at the photo. You sent good enough photos that we can blow them up and take a look at them with a little calmness.
You know, that's an important point for anybody listening who doesn't want to call or isn't in the backyard right now, might be at work. If you have a problem, whether it's a pest or whether it's a plant, or you want to identify an invasive plant or a bug, you can send cell phone pics directly to us at Master Gardener, all one word, at Broward.org. And the better the pictures are, you don't be afraid to send us three or four shots from your cell phone, because if we can see the top side
and
of the leaf,
get close to it.
Get close and stand back, because sometimes the location of the tree has something to do, or the plant has something to do with what's going on.
And spell gardener correctly, unlike I did.
We're all guilty, right? Right.
It went now.
Yeah, excellent. So yeah, okay, do send Barbara, them. We love those pictures.
Okay.
And we have Carlos in Miami. Thanks for your patience. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Carlos.
Hi, how are you? Yeah, I have two questions. The first one is, which vegetables can I plant in South Florida that are low maintenance? And the second question is, if I cut a tree, I know there's a way that I can get that branch into water or into maybe some dirt and a little water, and that will grow roots later on. Thank you so much.
Well, okay, thank you.
The first thing, we have a planting guide for South Florida vegetables that tells you what you can and can't plant each month. And because of the show, you can go to broward.org/parks. And there's a Things to Do tab there.
Would you say that again?
Okay. It's www.broward.org/parks. And when you get to that parks page, there's a Things to Do tab, and you click that, and it says gardening advice. And you click that open, and then a bunch of little articles come up. And one of them is a planting guide for South Florida vegetables, because there's about 40 different ones you can plant right now. And a lot of it is do small numbers, so you can handle it properly, and it'll be a lot easier. Have them in some kind of pots or jiffy bags or something, and it'll be a lot easier.
You know what? I would have to say, knowing all the Master Gardener urban farmers that we have, John, that there is no such thing as a low-maintenance vegetable garden, except
right.
for the fact that if you are preventative and if you're proactive in what looking at your garden every 48 hours, you'll probably stop 90% of the maladies that occur just from visual observation.
Right.
Because when you see a problem within 48 hours, you can eradicate it many times mechanically just by pulling the bug off the plant. When you walk away and expect to come back a week later in South Florida and you've left your vegetables out there, it's mayhem. So the best thing you can do is to prevent problems by looking for them, and then it will be low maintenance.
Right, and the other thing is, don't be afraid to sacrifice. If you have a tomato plant that's infested and the other ones are not,
get rid of it,
because yeah. it's worth a lot.
That's
you're
right.
going to spend money.
And most likely white flies?
White flies, and there are little thrips that get on them. Then there are viral diseases.
Fungus, too.
Fungus.
Especially this time of year, yeah. Now with all this rain. What
yes.
We were talking about fungus. What's the best thing to do for fungus that's safe?
When you can use liquid copper. Liquid copper will kill a lot of things, but there's also a natural remedy, neem oil. The only thing is, neem hurts some things. So you have to read the label very carefully. If the plant isn't listed on the label, that means there's no guarantee it won't okay. do a number on it.
Topical Currents at your service. Rob in Fort Lauderdale. Hi there.
Hi, yeah. For the last 20 years, I've planted all kinds of native Florida trees. Everything from Geiger, Jamaican capers, stoppers, oaks, paradise trees, gumbolimbos. I'm turning my whole yard into this giant jungle.
Cool.
Now, I was wondering, when I trim them this year, I finally started just cutting them up real small and just laying them under to really start building it up. Is that a bad thing to do, or should I keep putting them out in green barrels?
No, mulch it.
Oh, okay.
Just put it in a little pile. The whole idea is don't apply any plant material that's green below another plant ever. Because remember, as far as each one of those plant cells are concerned, they're going to grab nutrients. So they'll actually suck up the nitrogen from the plant that you have. So you're hurting the plant rather than helping it. So if you let them all turn brown, and then only if it takes a couple weeks to do that, a few weeks, then you can put it on as sort of compost that's used as mulch, and it'll be just fine. They just don't put, it's like putting green grass blades under
a
shrub.
Alive. It's
uh-huh.
still
gotcha,
alive.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay, I'll do that. And I'll tell you, it's been beautiful. I don't fertilize, I don't water, I don't do anything except But boy, do I trim. Holy smokes.
And get a hold of Environmental Protection because they are asking for nominations for the Emerald Award. So if you really have all that stuff going on, you might qualify. And it's a nice award and a plaque, and the mayor gives it to you. Yeah, it's quite a deal.
Yeah, and it's only a 75 by 150 yard.
That's no wonder you're cutting so much.
They have different class size yards in yards businesses for those business listeners we have out there.
Oh, cool. What was the name of that again?
It's the Emerald Award in the Environmental Protection and Growth Management Department of Broward County. You can call their general number, and they'll refer you to the right office. It's part of the NatureScape program.
Right. I bring people on tours of the yard, and I give them the history of each plant.
Oh,
you know, here's the Geiger, here's the ironbark, you know, and everything. And and they're all beautiful.
Have you certified your yard as a habitat?
No.
You got to go to the National Wildlife Federation and do that. Broward County gets points for that.
Oh, yeah.
Points for every home that's certified.
Do you have butterfly garden?
Oh, do I have butterflies?
I want to go to your house.
I got a talus on my coon teeth.
Cool. Oh, lovely.
That's great. And I got the hawk who eats the snake. Snake ate the bird.
Want to become a master gardener?
Yeah, right.
Let's recruit right
now.
Yeah,
we need to recruit you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks
for calling, Ron.
Okay, and we'll move along. John, this is somebody that wants to discuss something we talked about earlier. Mary in Coral Springs. Hi there.
Yes, hi, guys. So every day I walk my dog and I pass these beautiful, bright yellow flowers, the bushes. I believe they're Alamanda, right?
Yeah.
Big, spiky balls, you know, the seeds. Now, when I pick one off, and it comes off very easily. I'm not ripping it off. It's dry. It's brown, you know, and I've broken them open and tried to plant them, and it never, ever works. Should I be waiting until they fall to the ground and split open on their own before I can plant those seeds?
They have to, if it is an Alamanda, they have to open on their own for the seeds to be ready. If you open it before that, they're not ready.
Okay,
so they're not complete yet.
But Mary, there's something else about Alamanda that you should know that we were talking about
deadly
before
toxic.
The show.
It is really deadly toxic. You know, I'm on the last resort for the poison center in my greater Miami, which includes everything all the way up to Palm Beach County. And I get calls at 1 a.m. and a kid swallowed 6 of them and he's not breathing properly. You know, it's
the flowers or the leaves.
The flowers, anything with the sap. It's in that family has really the oleander family. That's what that belongs to, and that's the most toxic, second most toxic plant on earth. The first being our favorite rice and
have you confirmed that it's an Alamanda, or do you just think it is? Because there's lots of yellow flowers down here.
You know, I went to environmental science and forestry school. I garden all the time.
Okay.
I've got a million books. You know,
it probably is an Alamanda then.
Yeah,
but
I wasn't aware it was toxic. Thank you so much. I guess I'm not going to try so hard to plant them anymore.
And is it toxic to her dog, to Mary's dog?
It could be. Yeah, look up Alamanda cathartica.
That's a good question, yeah.
Yeah, Alamanda cathartica is that species that you're talking about.
Okay.
So look that up, and it'll tell you what the toxicity levels on the Cornell website.
I appreciate that so much. Would you mind answering one more thing for me? I have a rabbit foot fern. And I wanted to get all of the dead roots out of it and kind of give it a fresh start. Now, I was told to pin them into the soil so they don't rot, so they don't get buried and get too wet. Is that true? Like, you can use bobby pins?
That's because it doesn't. The roots are actually very tiny, and you don't even see them. Those are rhizomes. They're horizontal stems that grow along the ground. So, yes, you lay them on top of the ground. And you scratch them on the side that touches the earth, and then you pin them down, and they'll root. Easy.
Oh, perfect.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
Okay, thanks for calling, Mary.
Yeah, have a good one.
And now that we've talked about Alamanda being so toxic and poisonous, why don't we just quickly run down some of the more poisonous plants that people give for Christmas?
Yeah, but the ones you don't want to get.
Like mistletoe and holly.
Yeah, there are a lot of plants that people like to give people. They like to give people monsteras, which are the split-leaf philodendrons. The philodendrons and everything in the caladiums, philodendrons, and a lot of the other, even wonderful plants like peace lily that really cleans a lot of nasty chemicals out of your air. Everything in the aeroid family has, in each cell, is a little spicule. It's sort of like a two-sided needle of calcium oxalate. And when it gets in touch with a living membrane, that tissue swells many times its normal size. Mm. So what we find is little kids and pets will bite on a leaf to see what it's like. And when they do, their entire mouth swells. And if they've swallowed a piece, their esophagus can swell, which will prevent them from breathing. And a tube will have to be forced down to for them to respire. So it's not that it's a toxic poison, but that it's a physical reaction. And it's, but it can be very scary. Because they can't breathe.
Okay, so it's the philodendron family.
That whole philodendron family.
The peace lilies.
The peace lilies. And basically, with the exception of, with very few exceptions, in general, if things have white sap, be careful with them. Because a lot of the plants with white sap have white sap because it's a mechanism so animals won't eat them. So therefore, it's poisonous.
But to your point, John, you know, the point is it's children and pets. In other words, give them responsibly. I give my mother a peace lily probably every year. She loves it. She
along with
a
rosemary plant.
Exactly.
Right. But
and
if
she
you have
loves
kids
it.
Around, you
yeah,
should.
You should, yeah, you should keep it out of harm's way if they, because they always have a tendency to want to chew on stuff.
And they do clean the air very well.
Yeah, they have benefits to them. That's exactly why I give it to her. It's one of the best air cleaning plants there is.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take another short break. We're at your service. We're talking about gardening. We'll get your calls and emails after this.
And we're back with today's topical currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, at your service. We're talking about gardening here on Topical Currents with the president of Florida Master Gardeners of Broward County, Terry Goldsmith, and Urban Horticulture and Natural Resources Extension Agent, Dr. John Pipoli. And we move along to Lisa in Fort Lauderdale. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi, Lisa.
Oh, hi. Wow, this is cool. My question is about Augustine grass, and I don't have a yard near as nice as that guy talking about it's jungle. That sounds really cool. But we got new grass put in the front yard, and it's just filled with nut grass. And I know that's not a broadleaf weed, so finding something to kill it, I can't do it without killing the grass.
What kind of thing?
Nut grass. It's a nut sedge. Grass. There's some specific pesticides that control nut grass, and you can ask. I would go to a pretty fancy nursery, and they have those because it's not chemicals that everyone carries, and it's expensive, and you have to be very careful with it because it's not.
Do you think it would be better to get like a pesticide company rather than try to just?
No,
because they know less than you do right now.
You know what? That's exactly true. When I became a master gardener, I stopped all my programs like that.
Yeah, I think the thing to do is to either do that or selectively take out a group. The other thing to consider is how long ago did you put this sod? Is it sod, right?
It's St. Augustine, yeah.
And how long ago did you have it put down?
It was probably, well, the nut grass started appearing probably 2 weeks after it was even put down.
You should have photographed it, grafted it, and called them up and told them you were going to turn them into the Better Business Bureau because they're supposed to put sod down that's free of weeds.
Are you too overwhelmed?
You know what? My parents got sod in their house recently, and it all came up with nut grass, too. And that was in Martin County, which is not Broward. Huh. I mean, it just seems like working by clean St. Augustine.
Is it so overwhelmed that it's the mechanical method of removing it is out of the question?
Oh, well, if you want to come over.
That's why I don't have any St. Augustine.
Here's step one. Step one.
You can come over. I mean, I've tried to pick it out by hand. Huh. And it's too much.
Well, step one is to raise the deck of the lawnmower. And we normally tell people to cut St. Augustine at 4 inches. But since you're trying to get rid of the nut sedge, cut it at 5 or 6 inches. You know why?
It'll drown it out.
Cut out the watering completely. Turn your sprinkler off because the St. Augustine can withstand not having water. Yeah. The other
you
thing
water
is
like not so frequently so that the roots go deeper, right?
Exactly. But right now, when you're trying to get rid of the sedge, you got to eliminate the water because sedges are wholly dependent on water. So raise it to 6 inches and cut the water, and you'll starve out the
sedge.
Starve
it out. How long will it take, John?
should be able to, if she can do it for a month, you'll hurt the St. Augustine, but you won't kill it all.
But don't you worry about chinch bugs when it gets too dry?
No, because it's so tall, it'll conserve its water at the root line, see?
Yeah.
You know, it's very common for people to to cut the grass too low most of the time.
Oh, I know, because they don't come back so often.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lisa.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Okay.
And we move along to Robert in Miami Lakes. Hey there. Robert.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Hello.
Hi.
Hi, great. All right, two quick questions. One, first, some background. I live in Miami Lakes, so I'm sure you're familiar with how this topsoil is there. It's usually a couple inches of topsoil and then just aggregate from here to China. I mean, I got to use blasting caps to make a hole in my yard. And so that notwithstanding, I decided to plant cherry hedges along my backyard. And it was about 70 to 80 cherry hedges. I think they came from 6 or 8 inch pots. I think they were 6 inch pots. And they did fine. They did a little bit of transplant shock at the beginning. But there is one section where all of a sudden, batches of the hedges just started dying back. They've already been in the ground for about 8 to 10 months. And it's weird. It's like part of the plant just dies back and then the rest of it sort of continues.
Yeah, that's called verticillium wilt. That they're susceptible to that. And what you have to do is eradicate those as quickly as you can because it'll spread all the way across.
Oh, dear. Okay,
yeah, it's a bad thing. And it's just luck.
And the root ball was gone.
Yeah, it's just bad luck. It's verticillium wilt. Usually one half of a tree will be gone.
Exactly.
And the other, that's what it is, verticillium wilt. Yeah, they're susceptible.
It's better to just pull it out of the ground, right?
Yank it out. Yeah. Put it in a plastic bag so it rots. Otherwise, its trip to the dump will contaminate everything.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, and when I did pull one out, I figured, well, maybe it's got some new damage or didn't plant right because, you know, I had to basically dig and then until I hit rock and then pound up the soil. And most of the root ball had disappeared.
Yeah, that's it. That's what it is.
Oh, goodness gracious. And one more quick question. Again, it relates, I think, to the soil. My St. Augustine, which I'm trying to eradicate as much as possible, the planting Florida native plants, but what's left of it is very patchy, and I've noticed that the soil is also extremely hard. It's almost like...
Yeah, it got compacted somehow, so the only way you can do that is rent one of those machines with the plugs that aerates it.
Right.
You can go to edis.ifas.ufl.edu. And it'll tell you how to aerate your soil.
Yeah, if you Google EDIS, it comes up also.
Yeah.
Great, because I've left a few bare patches where I've dethatched. I figured, let me, as an experiment. Yeah.
And that's from cutting the lawn too low. Raise the deck on your lawnmower to 4 inches.
Yeah, I used to do that. I've raised it up now, but it was, lessons learned. All right, well, thank you very much.
Sure.
Okay, thanks, Robert. We just want to take a moment here to tell you that we have so many calls and emails. In case we don't get to you, we want you to get the email address. You can send it directly to Dr. Pipoli and Terry Goldsmith. It's mastergardener@broward.org, mastergardener@broward.org, or you can call them at 954-357-5121, 954-357-5121, if we don't get to you.
And next caller from Wilton Manors. Hey, Stephen, hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
I have some problems. The first one is I'm wondering why my lychee trees have not produced fruit in 4 or 5 years.
Not enough water.
Not enough water.
Not enough water at the right time.
Well, what's the right time?
It's about this time of year. Last year, none of them got enough water. The ones that are at Plantation Heritage Park, where we have a huge germplasm collection, just didn't do anything either. The shift in the climate is so bad. Some of the crops are just not behaving properly, and lychee was a big sufferer for the last 2 years. We haven't had a good crop in almost 4 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just the way it is. It's climate change. I don't know what else to say.
Okay, well, I will definitely start watering them more. My other questions are...
we only can take one more, Stephen, because we have lots
of
people waiting.
Okay. The big one is about citrus. I've tried about a half dozen different types of citrus trees, and they've all died.
Okay, here's the story with citrus. It's going to be painful. Citrus trees in Florida are going to get greening and they're going to get canker. It's not if, it's when. So we have to live like the Brazilians do and understand that we buy trees that are a year and a half to 2 years old. They'll start producing around 3 to 4 years, and they'll produce well until maybe, if we keep lakeside jasmine out of the neighborhood and some other things, till they're 6 or 7 years old. Then there'll be a decline. And by the time they're 10 years, you pull them out. So according to our tree abuse ordinance and some other things we have, be smart. Keep your tree as a shrub. That way you can pull them and replace it. It's a crop. When it's done, you pull it out. And
so you just keep trimming it.
You just keep trimming it, yeah, at the right time, so that you don't trim the flowers off. But you keep it small as a shrub. You work with it, and when it's diseased and the shape of the fruit is wrong, then you yank it out and put in a new one. There's nothing else we can do because the diseases are ubiquitous everywhere.
What about these weird bugs that look like a bird went on them?
Oh, those are the things that eat holes and everything. And the problem with those, the only way to get rid of those is to use a systemic in the veins, and then you can't eat the fruit.
Then you can't eat the fruit, right.
So we're kind of stuck right now.
Okay, Stephen, thanks so much for calling. Okay, let's get an email. Janet wants to know if she can prune her crepe myrtles this time of year. They're very leggy and have leaves only at the ends of the branches.
That has to do with timing of the plant. So if the majority of the leaves are already on the stems, you can trim them back a little bit. But she should look up a word that's P-O-L-L-A-R-D, the pollarding. And what they do with crepe myrtles is trim them back to a central point every year because they only flower on the new shoots.
Okay.
So you get these tremendous clubs at the end of branches. And that's acceptable to do. You're not hat racking it. You're pollarding. And then the new shoots bear all the flowers, and they're under control, and they're not too tall, and everything else. So that's for that particular species, that's what the horticultural remedy always has been.
All right. And solution for lawn mushrooms?
There's no solution necessary. There's nothing wrong with lawn mushrooms.
This is Michael in Delray. Okay, so just nothing.
It's all
wrong
the rain.
Nothing
wrong. Stop.
Yeah, it's just the rains around and there's spores around. And
you can't put those in the salad, though.
No,
not a good idea. Nah.
But one thing you should know is be happy for them because they're digesting the minerals around, and it's going to mean more nutrients available
for
the lawn when they die.
That's right.
So
okay,
it's a
Michael.
Good thing.
So no solution needed.
No.
Right. Right. Okay, we're speaking about gardening at your service, a short break, and we'll be right back.
And we're back as today's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, at your service with gardening here on Topical Currents with John Pipoli and Terry Goldsmith. And let's quickly get to our calls because we do have many. Ingrid in Miramar, you're up high.
Ingrid.
Is that you?
Yes, Ingrid Francis. I just wanted to call in and tell Dr. John that I love hearing him on the radio, and I am looking forward to coming back to his class. I did it before, and I'm in a new home and a whole different bag of issues. And to everybody who's listening, take his class. How about you, Dr. John?
I am very fine, thank you. Nice to hear from you.
You don't remember who I am.
Yes, I do. Very much so. Thank you very much. We want to see you volunteering again because you did very well in class.
I know. I'm retired. I got more time.
Oh, good.
Okay, Ingrid, thanks so much for calling.
Bye-bye.
Rob wants to know, he's moving to Georgia, has a gardenia bush he'd like to clone because the bush is too large to remove from the ground. How does he root clone the plant? How about the pH of the rooting medium, neutral, acidic, or base?
Golly, isn't it easier to just plant a new one? I mean,
it really is. If you have a prize one, you may want to do some rooting in perlite with some hormones would probably be the easiest way to do it. No matter what you do here, it's going to be basic. It would really be hard for you to do anything other than that, except to have some peat moss mixed in with perlite maybe.
And I'd do a couple just to make sure you're successful with one of them.
But also remember that the world's finest gardenia society is in Atlanta.
I was just going to say, isn't it the land
Georgia's
of the gardenia?
Georgia's the capital of the gardenias. It would be sort of like somebody bringing an orange to Florida, you know.
Okay.
It's just not really something you want to do.
Okay, right. And next up, it's Lori in Hollywood. Hi there. Lori.
Hi, Lori.
That's me. Hi. Hi, Bonnie. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, thanks. And hi, Joe, Terry, hello. And of course, John.
Ah, yeah, nice to hear from you.
Yes, and I am calling about an issue that you and I have spoken about, John, but I think it's an important one to get everybody in South Florida talking about, so I'm going to stir up the pot here. As you know, I'm a master gardener. I have a yard that's certified by National Wildlife Federation. Broward Naturescape said that if I get rid of one naughty, nasty tree, they would certify it. And it is, it's taken me 20 years to get rid of grass and get in all kinds of things that attract birds, butterflies, and critters. And here's the issue. Somebody complained to code enforcement, and code enforcement says, yes, we must have grass, grass in swales, grass on lawns. As I'm sure you've read, other drought-stricken areas are, like California, there's industries getting rid of grass, filling in swimming pools.
I know, but let's just cut to the chase.
Okay.
The deal is this. Whatever the code is, you're stuck with.
Right.
So what you have to do to be reasonable, there are people that have this problem from time to time. Different cities have different regulations. Talk to code enforcement. If that doesn't work, talk to your commissioner.
Yeah, petition.
That's about
your
all
commissioner.
You can do.
Nope.
Petition
exactly
the
right.
Commissioner. There's no other thing anybody else can do. We can't get involved. We can't recommend.
No, I know. I know.
Nor
I
them
didn't
either.
Want to make it about me. I'm putting in some ground cover that is native, and we came to a happy resolution.
Great.
I just
Perfect.
Think for everybody, the issue of grass versus no grass and what is a responsible thing to do and which way should we as South Floridians be looking to do what's the new normal?
I think the thing is each piece of property is different. Mm-hmm. If you want going to want to play badminton or tennis, you need some lawn around. So I don't think we need to be purists in any direction. So I think it's common sense. I think most of the laws say so much percentage of your lot has to be green, and they don't specify lawns. But if your HOA specifies a lawn, you're stuck. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah. Hmm.
And next up, we have Diane in... Well, Diane, you're up.
Hi, hello. Diane, with the avocado tree and pesticides.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. We have a delicious and gorgeous avocado tree that's bearing fruit right now.
Okay.
And a year ago, we had subterranean termite treatment where they came in and trenched all around the house. And they came back, so they came and did it again. And our concern is eating the fruit.
That how far is the tree from the house?
Well, part of the tree hangs over the house.
No, the root system, how far?
Root system is what I'm worried about. I'm not worried about anything else. Did they
well,
tent the
I'm
house and fumigate
it? I'm worried
inside?
About the root system and it soaking in the termidor.
What was that inside the house or was it exterior?
No, outside the house. They trenched around the outside of the house and took...
I wouldn't eat the fruit for a year.
Okay.
Yeah,
I
at least
mean,
a
just
year
wouldn't
anyway.
Do it.
Yeah.
It's not worth it.
And then send a note to mastergardener@broward.org, and what we'll do is we'll forward your question to the world expert in termites that's at the University of Florida,
good
and he'll
idea.
Tell us what the it's called the half life of the chemical is in the soil, and he'll give us a definitive answer.
Yeah, that's the safest bet.
Okay, thank you.
Okay,
sure.
Thanks, Diane.
Mm-hmm,
Marcia, bye. Marcia wants to know some advice on herbs. She says she grows herbs in a postage stamp garden outside her back door. Problems with brown spots on basil, snails munching thyme, heat, cilantro goes to seed almost immediately. Suggestions?
Well, you know, finding herbs that get along together, I have had this experience. I share your pain. It sounds like a really cute idea to get a little herb garden, put them all next to each other, and all be happy little campers. But all of them seem to have their own needs of sunlight, watering, you name it. And I know I read recently that there's a big problem with basil going on since last year, and they're predicting for another couple of years. And I believe it's a form of powdery mildew, is it
yes,
not, John?
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
And everyone I talk to says, basil, you know, basil is so beautiful. We all want to grow it. And it used to be easy to grow, but we've got a blight right now in South Florida that they say is going to probably take a couple of years to get
so
rid of.
So it's a black mold?
Is it a black mold, John? I forget.
It's like a sooty mold, but the blight is actually a bacterium. And the problem is that the bacterium comes, and then there, you have this blotch on the leaf. The leaf begins to decompose, and then there's sap around. And then the insects come to the sap, and then they carry the sooty mold spores.
And then the leaves turn black.
Right now for basil, I'm telling people, plant it inside, grow it in your windowsill, and not
That's
be
exactly
out in the public.
Right. And when you do trim stuff outside, remember, you should disinfect your pruning tool so you don't spread disease from one to the next, even
what do
if you,
do
you don't
that
know.
With?
You can disinfect with alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Alcohol. Or chlorine. Alcohol.
Chlorine. Yeah.
Alcohol will dry quickly. Rubbing alcohol.
7%. That way you're safe. You're not spreading it around.
How do you get a Christmas cactus? What is the proper conditions for Christmas cactus?
It needs 14 hours of light for 3.5 months to set flower.
It almost seems like you need to stress it out a little bit to get it to set
flower. It's a short, long day plant.
Yeah.
If you Google that, it's a short, long day plant. So it needs that length of time of 14 hours of true sunlight. So for people that are crazy, Christmas cactus.
But not necessarily full sun.
No, because no. I had mine facing east.
Right.
And it would have full sun, and the pieces would just die.
They get
fall
too
off
dry.
Several
That's
times.
Right. Too dry.
It's really ideal.
Yeah, it's 14 hours of light enough to trigger.
14 hours of bright light. And so, for example, my mother has one in her bedroom. I guess you can say I give her a lot of
plants. Your mom.
So my mom's got it going. But she's got one beautiful one in her bedroom, and it's full light, and it's pretty much all day long. And that seems to be the key, is to full direct, not direct light.
And how much water?
You water it when it's bone dry.
When it's bone dry.
Bone dry,
yeah.
Really.
Not before.
Not before, that's right.
And we're getting close to the end of our program, so please be brief. Larry, North Miami Beach, hi.
Hey, how you doing? I've got $1 million question.
Oh, good.
I live in a condominium association built in the 80s, early 80s, late 79, 80s. And in a number of places, they used some fairly undesirable trees, black olives, et cetera.
Right.
Which have now rooted through the concrete and destroyed almost all of the curbing, creating what I consider to be creating a gigantic hazard as far as safety goes. Additionally, I've noticed the line at which the buildings were completed or stuccoed on the outside is now visible by 4, 5, 6 inches in some areas.
Those are all code enforcement issues.
Right.
So you have to deal with code enforcement, and if you don't get anywhere with code enforcement, you have to do the commissioner petition thing. And it really does work, I'm telling you.
I'm in a homeowners association.
Well, I know.
I'm facing the condominium board because, of course, there's a tremendous cost. Yeah.
But they have to respond to code.
They have to respond to code. And if the code enforcement people go out there and see violations, they'll find
right.
it. Ultimately, you'll have to pay part of it, too, because they'll do a special assessment.
Well, yeah.
Okay. And can I ask you one quick question? Lead paint in soil and in grass, I know, is a tremendous problem. In the Bahamas, I know that they don't really have grass.
I don't think we even sell lead paint. I don't even think
quick
it's
answer,
legal to
John.
Sell for years.
Not really. We really don't have that here. There's contaminants in the soil in both counties. That's why we have people grow vegetables in containers rather than in the soil.
Right.
Because we have toxics.
And I just want to give out again, if we didn't get to you or you have a question for either Terry Goldsmith, president of the Florida Master Gardeners of Broward County, or Dr. John J. Pipoli, the third Urban Horticulture and Natural Resources Extension Agent, Broward County Parks and Recreation Division. Email mastergardener@broward.org. Excuse me, at broward.org, 954-357-5121. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for
having
us.
Thank you for having us.
Fun
it's
time.
Such a privilege.
Happy holidays
really
to everybody.
Like being here.
Thank you. And thanks to all of our listeners.
Well, that's our At Your Service edition. It was produced by Richard Ive, technical direction from online producer Paul Leary. Check out his work as well at the Topical Currents Facebook page and on the radio page of the WLRN website. There we have free audio downloads of Topical Currents archives. Join us for tomorrow's program when we visit with historian Dr. Paul George and historian and tour leader Corina Mabius about the possible upzoning in Miami's historic Little Havana area. Preservationists are nervous about possible high-end development. And again, thanks for tuning in. Happy gardening. Joseph Cooper for Bonnie Berman. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.